Welcome to El Toddcast.
And dinner.
dinner and a Toddcast.
Dinner and a Toddcast.
Yes. It is dinner and a Toddcast this week. I bet you didn't know that.
Yeah.
But it's a crazy time, man. Like, it's been a long freaking day. It's been hot. It's my day off, and I've had like a million freaking phone calls, and
yeah.
Oh, this is awful. So I drank beer. That's what I did today. I said, fuck my bike ride. I'm drinking beer.
So, I cried and played Pokemon.
I was going to play my Super NES Classic, but because I was talking to somebody about it yesterday, and I did not get around to it. So, all right. So we got some cool stuff coming up in the stores. So, Saturday, free comic book day. That does not mean that all of the comics in the world are free. It's just certain ones will be free. And also, they were not free to us. So please, if you have a couple bucks and you want to spend some stuff, and not even with us, all of the local shops, we actually pay for those. So please support and then get
some. Because we love you guys.
Yeah. So I think I'm going to end up out at our Ohio store. Helping out there. It'd be a good time. I haven't been out there since their first one for a free comic book day. So this will be kind of exciting for me. Then next week, we have our rescheduled and confirmed the books will actually be there because they're on the invoice. Ron Friend signing on Wednesday and Thursday.
Wednesday 12 and Thursday.
To 3 at the Mills, 4 to 7 at Cranberry on Wednesday. And then on Thursday, 4 to 7 at the Waterfront. We're also going to be doing a bye week for the show. We're going to skip that week, and then we're coming back the week after that with who's our guest that week, Tim?
Jordan Blum, who was the writer of the MODOK miniseries and the Hulu show.
Which one of the is creators. Fucking hilarious. I may actually try to sample that goat scream before that happens.
Okay.
So that I have it.
I have questions for him about if he is a Third Eye Blind fan or not.
Yeah. I mean, I am. So that's all.
I am too. So that's why I want to know. Like, is he or was he making fun of them? I need to know so I can know how I feel about him.
Right. And then in September, we're going to be at MementoCon the first week of September. So come visit us down there. It's a 2-day show. It's mostly focused on guests from Supernatural. And I'll be there hanging out all weekend. It's going to be a good time. And then the first Sunday of September, we actually had, or that same Sunday, we have our Labor Day cookout in Cranberry. You can do signups for that. I think they're online right now at the Cranberry's Facebook event. They should be hitting our website soon. And then the 18th of September is our legendary basement sale, which you can do your early bird. You can sign up for on our website right now. You pay for it ahead of time and you get early access to there. And that's pretty much how that rolls. There's a lot of other stuff coming up, but you know, we try to pick and choose what we talk about. You know, speaking of stuff coming up, if anyone missed the announcement, Three Rivers Comic Con is going to be in downtown Pittsburgh in 2022, the first weekend of June, June 4th and 5th.
The first weekend of June?
Yeah. In 2022.
It's my freaking birthday, dude.
Really?
Yeah.
The 4th and 5th?
That is, my birthday is the 6th. That's the best way that I can think to spend my birthday weekend. That's amazing. That's
awesome. Well, happy birthday. Three Rivers Comic Con. It's going to be awesome. Yeah. but we're going to be at the David L. Lawrence Convention Center for that. So make sure you check that out.
I'm excited, man, to just like small cons have been great. I can't wait for the next one. But like big cons, I can't wait. I'm so excited for this.
We still have our light event, Three Rivers Light, coming up in October outside, and it's going to be awesome. Don Simpson's going to be there, Sammy Castillo, Howard Bender, I'm missing somebody. Crap. I can't remember who the other one is. But we booked this awesomely cool toy vendor called Eternia Dreams. They deal in like 80s and 90s nostalgia toys. So like Masters of the Universe, Ninja Turtles, Transformers,
G.I. Joes.
Yeah, well, Masters of the Universe is He-Man, yeah.
Yeah.
With the name Eternia Dreams, you kind of have to,
yeah,
you know, take that in there.
Thundercats.
But they're gonna be,
oh man,
they're going to be coming up there. They have two tents. They're going to be set up there. It's going to be awesome. We do have some more announcements for that show coming up. So watch our social media this week at the number 3 Rivers Comic Con, and you can just find it.
Yeah.
And so for the June show, people are asking. Registration for tables and tickets are not up yet. I will have announcements for that soon. We're just settling on ticket pricing and things like that. If you have a ticket for the 2020 show, though, way back in 2020, those tickets are actually good for the 2022 show. They've been pushed all the way up to that. So make sure you come and check that out. It's going to be sauce. So, cool. I'm just trying to catch up on the chat real quick. So everything looks pretty good. Ron's definitely posting today. It's awesome.
Yeah.
And Dan. Yeah, all right. Hi, Dan.
And Dan's in here.
So,
yep.
Yeah. Yes, Dan, you will have to sign up for the early bird and let me know what day you're going so that we can hang out all day. Because that's really the highlight of my early birds is the day I get to hang out with Dan all day in the basement. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. All right. So if you didn't see the description on our Facebook event, we called this episode What If?
Yeah.
And it's what if John and Tim slam through 4 comics apiece, because we haven't talked comics for 2 weeks. 4 comics apiece and hit up all of the pop culture stuff, which is going to include Suicide Squad, What If, and what was the other one?
Suicide Squad, What If.
There's the third one. We can talk about it now. James Tynion not renewing his contract with DC. So what does this mean for you as the Ovid fan? Pretty much you can still buy all of his other published stuff on Image, Boom. I think that's it, right? Just mostly just
Image and Boom. Yeah.
But he just won't be writing Batman anymore. Or if he does, it'll be for a very small, like a mini series or something. Like his long-term contract is gone.
I think after this Fear State saga is over is when he's done. It's like 116.
Well, he has to finish up his Joker stuff too.
Yeah.
But then he's still doing the Black Label stuff because that's technically creator owned.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. At least that's what I read on his Twitter.
And this is all going to be, this new stuff is all going to be published on Substack, right?
Yep.
And so,
well, the non-print stuff, yes.
Yeah. So he's going to be doing stuff with Hickman. It's not confirmed yet if Hickman is leaving Marvel. There's a lot of speculation that he is, because he already has jumped off of the X-Men book and is doing this mini, the Inferno mini that's coming up later this year. But from what I read, they're doing this thing called Three Worlds, Three Moons, or Three Moons, Three Worlds. And Al Ewing is going to be helping out. He is going to create the religious architecture for each moon and each world. Tinney Howard is supposed to create the economic system for each moon and each world. And then they've got a couple nice artists that are going to be working on it. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting. I hate seeing guys leave print because it just kind of bums me out, especially from like a store end, but you know.
So. Yeah, but I mean, but he's not leaving print completely. He's just leaving
DC. Not completely. So. Yeah, I hate to see the guys edge that way, because then I worry that if it ends up taking off, that, you know, more people will follow suit, you know.
So. Well, he's not the first person to ever do this either.
No, he's just really big right now.
Well, that's usually when it happens, though. unfortunately. Yeah. So, all right, let's talk about some comics.
What if Tim ate his dinner on time?
I'm going to go first to give you some time to eat. How's that?
Okay. All right. I'll try not to chew.
It's all right. My first book is The Joker Puzzle Box, number one.
And this is from 2 weeks ago, right? Okay.
So this is by Matt Rosenberg. I love Matt Rosenberg. I think he's an excellent writer. The art was a little hit or miss in places. But it was really cool because, like, most of it is Gordon interviewing the Joker, and he has, like, the Joker had a party or was thrown a party, and Batman and Robin show up, or Batman and the whole Bat family show up, and he, like, plays it out like he helped Batman beat up people and all kinds of stuff. And in the middle of it, you get to the point where someone killed the Riddler. And then you find out that the Riddler was actually looking for these five boxes that are similar to mother boxes, but they are from fourth world. Yeah.
Okay.
They're like apocalyptic boxes from the high gods. So, you know, the puzzle box is the box that Riddler was looking for. It is very wordy, but it reminds me of when Bendis was like at his freaking best, because there are parts in here where it like goes through all the people that were at the party. So it's like Bane, Mr. Freeze, Ivy, Harley, like all these people, and they all just kind of have like a one line, like, and it's just nine boxes of that. I really enjoyed,
like, from
the
their point of view. From like their point, like, of view, or
yeah, because they're all sitting in the jail, right?
Okay.
And like Gordon or somebody asked them something, and they're like, they just kind of go through and be like, yeah, that, like, I'll talk, or, and then it's like, what am I being charged with? And then it's like, I'll talk if it's about this thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's actually pretty cool the way it played out, in my opinion.
I don't know why I thought Chip Zdarsky was on that also.
He did the cover.
He did the cover. Okay.
Yeah.
I always forget he does art too, because he's done some Daredevil covers on his run also.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he did the whole run of Sex Criminals too. So.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. He was the interior and exterior artist of Sex Criminals.
Except for that Scotty Young one.
That Scotty Young one was a variant.
Yeah, so. it was one of the polybag variants, and it was like a giant wet. Yeah, there's
so many of those. Yes. If you guys want to have a fun time, go to Bing, because that's easier to search for this kind of crap. Turn off the safety feature and search for Sex Criminal XXX cover, and you're going to have yourself a fun time. I'm just telling
Especially you. The Scotty Young one.
Oh, yeah.
Just like a giant Wang mountain. Yeah. It's pretty amazing.
There's some pretty fucking hilarious ones. The one where it's like Matt and Chip sitting there, and Chip is actually naked. Like,
weren't they like spooning or something?
They're spooning and Chip's naked. Yeah. Like, that was like my favorite one. That was hilarious. So, all right. I am really curious to see, hear you talk about this book, because we talked about one frame in particular earlier. So, here you go. Let a rip on the Batman.
Okay, this one's from this week, and Batman 89 is exactly what it sounds like. It's the original Keaton film continued. And I was really excited because it looked like we were going to get, like, you know, the Harvey Dent stuff that we never got in that original series. And it's part one of six, and it probably should be part one of one. It was that bad. It's not, the story wasn't super terrible. There's some weird things, like Barbara Gordon works at the police department and she's engaged to Harvey Dent, which was, you know, they never even introduced Barbara Gordon. So, you know, at least that I remember in the 89 film. There might be one panel of Alfred that kind of looks like Alfred, but there's this picture of two panels that really caught my eye as far as, wow, this is bad. If you're going to do a book like this, I feel like you have to capture the likeness of somebody. You can't do Batman 89 about Michael Keaton. I mean, you can see on the cover, I mean, that looks very Keaton-ish. Mm-hmm. So you can't do these books and then not capture the likeness. I'm not saying it has to be like, you know, Salvador LaRocca level, like with his Star Wars and stuff, but this is, it's bad. The story's not that great. The artwork is very remedial. I probably would have appreciated it more if the person traced, like just if they would have just found images online. And it really bums me out because I was excited about this. And they're doing, you know, Superman 78, and I was excited about that. So now I'm like kind of like leery about whether I should even try Superman 78 or not. So
maybe I don't know. Through it before you buy it next time.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard when you see something that's Batman 89 that's in that Keaton era to not just want to be like, yes, I need that, and grab it. But I grabbed it without looking. Yeah, this is the.
And this is what you get.
This is what you get. That's supposed to be Michael Keaton.
Look how big his fucking forehead is. He looks like a penis.
Why does he have like all the gray hair on the side and stuff? I don't.
Like, how after is this supposed to be? Is this supposed to be after Returns?
No, I think this is supposed. I think it's supposed to be before Returns.
Like in between Batman. In between and Batman Returns.
Yeah. Like the Joker's clown posse is still running around. People are dressing up like, you know, the Joker and Batman. This was another one that kind of bummed me out. It was like that skyline and stuff in the Tim Burton film is just looks amazing. And then you look at this one and it's like there's no buildings, there's no sky. Like it just looks like somebody did it. I mean, he went through the trouble to put the graffiti on the side of the building and then to put the texture, like the rib texture and the concrete on one side, but not on the other. It's all over the place and it's pretty awful. So bums me out, but what are you going to do?
Well, continuing on the bumming me out thing, we're going to go with Masters of the Universe Revelation number 2. So I will say I did like the first 5 or 6 episodes of the cartoon. I thought it was good. I thought the first issue was really good. But this issue, I'm a little torn because it's a Skeletor-focused issue, and it gives him a different backstory than we've ever known. Like where he actually comes from a tribe of people that look like that, which is not anything that we normally know of Skeletor. Normally it's, you know, he's the brother of Randor, and he got like basically like the two-faced thing where he got acid splashed on him. This, he comes from a different dimension with those type of people. But the cool part about it, the saving grace of this book, is it shows him actually becoming part of the Horde and working for Hordak. That was really cool. Yeah. So I really enjoyed that part of the book. But I mean, the writing is still pretty good. It is Kevin Smith. I think Bob Shore is the artist, right? Mindy Lee did the art. Her art's awesome. Like, it's great. Great. And Bill Sienkiewicz did the cover, which was really good.
Yeah.
It's just that specific issue kind of made me go, I don't know.
yeah, that's weird. I really just like retcon his origin like that.
Yeah. I really did, though. I did enjoy the cartoon show a lot, though. I thought it gave Teela like a time to shine. She wasn't just the maiden in distress like they always used to put her in the 80s show. It focused on some of the others, like Evelyn got some great screen time.
Well, and it's all centered around like the anger of her, everybody finding out about Prince Adam and her not knowing, and knowing that everybody else knew. So yeah. like her feeling betrayed. So yeah. I thought that that kind of fit with it. I hear some valid complaints from people like it's where's He-Man, but you know, it doesn't say He-Man in the
second
title.
Half. Yeah, but it, yes. it leads to the second half that yeah. looks like it's going to be very He-Man focused, which is good.
Yeah.
But like the glow, the Scare Glow episode was excellent. Triclops was amazing, being voiced that by one Henry Rollins.
That like, one was awesome with that whole clan of like the robotic people.
Yeah.
I thought that was probably the best episode of the five. I think it was five.
I thought the Scare Glow one was the best, in my opinion. I thought that was just so cool. Because you got to see like Orko background, you got to see Teela kind of freaking out a bit. And you got to see Evil-Lyn really actually kind of do good stuff, which is kind of nice for once. So, all right. Let's see what else I got next on your plate.
Ron's bragging about how much money he spent tonight.
Huh?
Ron's bragging about how much money he spent tonight on the Facebook.
How much
sale.
Money did he spend on the thing?
Let me see. He spent a good bit. We did like seven. There's like $700 in books.
Damn. All right. Well, your next book is.
Yeah, this was last week.
You love. I wanted In the Dark. This just sounds so awesomely, like grossly pedophilic. That
yeah. I wanted to try. I'm not a big fan of like horror stuff, but it was Scotty Young. So I'm thinking like, maybe it's not really horror. It's just maybe more along the lines of like Middle West, you know, dark rather than horror. I don't know. We'll see. Everybody's doing horror right now because Tinian just took the world by surprise with Something is Killing the Children. Now everybody's trying to come up with a horror book. But this book was fun. It was very quick. So you have a struggling... or maybe not struggling, but it's a young artist who leaves the city and is looking for a home in the countryside so she could focus on rediscovering herself and her art. And she buys this house that is haunted. It moves very quickly. There's a lot of setup. It's a lot of her drinking wine and trying to come up with something to draw, while the ghost is kind of like, or whatever the spirit is, interacting in the background. The thing that I like about it is I like Scotty Young's art, and I like his books like I Hate Fairyland. I mm-hmm. like the fact that he can find artists that almost look like Scotty Young artists, you know? If you look at the images, if you look at this cover and some of the pages on the inside, they have that same style. It's very sketchy, exaggerated features, you know, long arms, pointy wrists, things like that. So overall, it was a decent, yeah. I mean, if you look at it just has that feel, that Scotty Young feel to it. So,
the thing I like about this panel that you pulled up specifically is the right amount of lens glare on this person with glasses.
Yeah. Just
I thought that was great.
Right. The right amount, the good facial expressions, exaggerated, but you know, this is this is supposed to be the spirit. I believe this white blob thing that's kind of always in the background. It kind of looks like a jacked up seahorse.
Yeah.
It's just kind of always what floating. I would go with. Yeah, it's kind of always floating in the background, and it speaks to her at one point. So, I mean, you don't get a lot in this book, but in the first issue, but you get the setup and some fantastic art. So I'll be interested to see the first few issues, how this goes. Does it get darker, or is it, you know, more on the Middle West side as far as just dark rather than horror? So, but if you didn't get it, I would say it's worth a check. So
I think it's gonna like, I think it sounds to me like it has like almost like a lock and key kind of vibe to it.
Yeah, I could agree with that.
Yeah. So now I'm actually interested in checking it out.
I also think, I wonder if this is like something that he struggles with, like this artist that can't come up with it, with something to draw, and is always like, you know, just kind of trying to beat down and get some art, but is hitting this block. Kind of reminds me of when we were talking to Daniel Warren Johnson about Extremity, you know, and the main character being an artist and losing the hand. So
yeah. Interesting. All right. My next book is Spirits of Vengeance, Spirit Rider.
That cover.
I will say my favorite part of this book is the art. Like, it was so kick-ass. Like, it was not like kick-ass, because kick-ass art kind of sucks because it's John Rita Jr. But, like, the art in this book, I really enjoyed. It kind of, like, it's not, like, super polished, but then there are pages where it just looks super freaking killer. Whenever Kushala is in her like actual like Sorcerer Supreme gear, it's awesome. This book is kind of cool. So a secondary demon has possessed Johnny Blaze, who is the Ghost Rider. And he goes to Doctor Strange for some help, gets Doctor Strange to help him, they have to go find Kushala. She helps him out, because she is supposed to be back from what, like the 1800s, right? And she's in the modern era, and she loves to do karaoke. Her whole thing is like she can go into your soul, but her body goes with her, which was really interesting to me. It wasn't just astral projection, it was like full body projection. So they kind of go through Johnny's history and try to figure out why the spirit is there. I'm not going to spoil it for everybody, because it was actually a very, very good read. It was very long though, so be prepared. It is a $4.99 book, so it does have a lot of stuff in it. You sent me this awesome.
Yeah, this was, I bought this one online. This was an Ashley Witter cover, and I thought it was awesome.
Yeah, that is crazy.
Yeah.
That's super, super good. I really enjoy that. I mean, it is pretty sweet. I enjoyed the book a lot.
It's a one-shot too, I think. So
yeah. But she appeared in a Doctor Strange storyline not too long ago. So this is not her first appearance. Sorry, Scalpers. So
first
solo. It was very well done though. Like I really liked it. So all right. Your next book.
Defenders. I love Al Ewing. He writes these things that I just don't know about sometimes, and then it makes me want to go find out more. Like, so this whole thing starts with the Masked Raider, not to be confused with Saban's Masked Rider, which is really like a... and the Masked Raider shows up in the Sanctum Sanctorum and is trying to get Stephen Strange's attention because of something, some end of the world, end of time event that is going to happen. So Stephen Strange uses his this spell that uses tarot cards to pick the right people for this job, so he doesn't have to, he's using his magic, but he's letting the magic, I guess, kind of make the decision. So he snags Silver Surfer, and they've got Masked Raider is going to be there. And then Harpy, and then on the right side there is Cloud, which I don't honestly know a ton about Cloud, but it was some cosmic entity that was given form by a cosmic cube. So I'm very interested to know more about that character. But they end up kind of in this end of time event, and they come face to face with what looks to be Galactus's mother.
What? So,
yeah. So that was kind of cool.
Does she still hunger?
She does not.
She does not hunger? She does.
Only when she's pregnant.
Oh, okay.
No, the artwork is fantastic. That's Javier Rodriguez. He's the guy that did the history of the Marvel Universe recently. Mm-hmm. It was in like the oversized trade, like one of those big Treasury edition ones. His art is fantastic, and he does all his colors. As you can see, the art and the colors are just out of this world. Yeah. So
he's got like a Mike Allred style to him, which is what I like.
Yes. Yeah, he does. The story was a lot of fun. It's opened me up to a couple characters because I don't know much about Masked Raider. Last time I saw him, he was in Incoming, which was that one shot that they did a couple years ago. And then he was also in Marvel Comics 1000. Mm-hmm. And the I do know, just from what they explained, the Masked Raider, the mask is some kind of cosmic entity that was... They took it and stitched it into a mask. Yeah. But I don't know much else, you know, other than that. So I'm kind of interested to go back and find out about some of these characters, him and Cloud. So, yeah.
Yeah. It'll be
kind of cool. Yeah, if you want something different, this is the book for you. And you can trust in Al Ewing's writing because he does great stuff, especially with time and space. So
true. All right, my last book, and this is actually a graphic novel. It's called Rainbow Bridge, and this is part of Seismic Press, which is Aftershock's young adult line. This is the first book they put out for it, I believe. So, and I kind of teased about this before because I had a couple pages in the back of something else, and I was like, oh my God, I need to read this. So... Basically, like, if a pet dies and it's a really good pet, it goes to the forever fields. And so Rocket, who's the dog on the front, goes to the forever field. And Andy, who's, you know, the master, the guy right there, he is sad because... You know, Rocket passed away, and he has freshman orientation coming up in like a couple days. So he kind of goes, instead of going to orientation, he goes and like hangs out and hides away in this like little hut they have. And he has one of Rocket's toys, and he kind of like hits his head, and all of a sudden he's transported into the forever fields. And, he has to, he runs into this cat. Hold on, I gotta tell you what her name was because it was hilarious. Ms. Pawdry Hepburn. So not only are they like cats and dogs, they're like huge, right? Like he can ride on Rocket. It's huge. So they're the Forever Fields being plagued by wraiths, and they don't know why. And Andy goes to help Rocket fulfill something. He has something he has to do. And here you find out that it's actually, he needs to find his sister. So he finds his sister who had been turned into a wraith. They figure out a way to save her from it. And then they have to fight, the Heck Hound, who is the big bad guy. And it's actually kind of cool when you find out who the Heck Hound is and how the book wraps up. But the way Andy gets out of the Forever Field is, you know, he has to actually say goodbye to Rocket. And there are parts to this that as a pet owner were really hard for me to read. Like I got choked up a couple different times. I'm going to recommend this to people who, if you're a parent and you're putting your pet down or your family just lost a pet, this is a good book to give your kid. Steve Orlando wrote it with Steve Fox, and Valentina Brancati did all the art, and the art's just absolutely fantastic in this book. It's very much so a young adult reader. I can't recommend it enough. It was so good, and it was actually a pretty quick read for like however many pages this is, and it was $16.99. So, but
maybe
I definitely
I'll
recommend
it. Maybe I'll buy one for Ron Friends
for his because
of his cat.
Yeah,
since he's gonna be there next week. Yeah.
Yeah. Sad.
Yeah.
So. All right.
Okay. So as far as pets, but real quick, as far as pet stories go, is it better than All Dogs Go to Heaven? Obviously different, but
this one's a little more adventure. So yeah, I will say it's better than All Dogs Go to Heaven because it's about adventure. I may actually have my wife read this book too, just to kind of give her a comic that she might actually enjoy.
Yeah.
I thought it was very good. Very good. All right, and boom.
X-Men 2. This book, this review is going to contain spoilers because I can't contain myself. Sure. Because something amazing happens in this book. So the last issue number one, was kind of like the setup with the X-Men moving to New York and moving into the treehouse. And then they got attacked, and another attack is going to happen on Earth again from Game World. And it's the Navari, which I think is one of the race of people that's running Game World now. Game World was originally run, I think we found out, by the Collector's sister in the Fantastic Four. You find that out through the Empire crossover. So now this is new ownership, and they're trying to destroy Earth, and they're taking bets on if they can destroy Earth with different things. And really cool combo of powers here. I really love the way that Jerry Duggan wrote this and used the powers with Sync. You know, Polaris was making a shield around the city, and then Sync is barring her powers so he can do the shield while Jean and Polaris go inside this creature and do basically with her magnetic powers and Jean's mind powers, they basically do like a psychic MRI to find out what this creature is. And then Sunfire comes in, and you know, he's going to do his thing and burn out this plague. I'll tell you about this in 1 second.
Okay.
But Sunfire has a really cool some cool moment in this book, but he eventually is going to burn out this threat that was sent to them from Game World, and the threat is none other than the Annihilation Wave. So the X-Men destroy the Annihilation Wave, which comes from the Negative Zone. They did a whole mini series with it. It's like that bug hive mind kind of thing that just takes over and destroys planets. I mean, it's effed up Richard Rider pretty good in that series. Remember, he was the last Nova left standing, and then here comes Sunfire, and he's like, boom, supernova, everything in this Annihilation Wave is gone, city's still cool, but all the bugs is dead. And then the thing that was interesting was at the end, you see this guy sitting with his family with this helmet, and they don't reveal who this person is yet, other than the name is Dr. Stasis. So it's a new character. And this family drops dead, and he's going to do some autopsy. And then in Hickman fashion, there's a letter at the end from the Orcus station, which was the, Sentinel head that was up in space where they were going to make, Nimrod. Mm-hmm. And he writes this article about how the X-Men way back in House and Powers, when they destroyed that Orcus station, this note that he writes details finding Cyclops's body. And he says, but I don't know how this is possible because I saw a Cyclops running around in New York at the treehouse. So this is the second issue where we see somebody catching on to the X-Men have found a way to cheat death. Mm-hmm. And he says in this letter that he is going to contact, who was it from the Bugle, the writer, in the first one. Anyways.
Oh, Ben Urich?
Yeah, Ben Urich, yeah.
Okay.
So he's going to contact him because he knows that Ben Urich has similar suspicions about the X-Men. So overall, I mean, a lot of good action, a lot of good power combos in ways that you haven't seen before. Nice to see Sunfire be in the spotlight and then taking out the Annihilation Wave. That's kind of huge. So when you're talking in the realm of just like the Marvel Universe, that there's no more Annihilation Wave. So continues to be good.
Cool.
And then I will show you this cover real quick on my on the screen.
Let me shrink it back or make it bigger.
If you're a fan of 90s trading cards, they are doing trading card variants for each team member. And then on the back, it has the stats and the power stats and the description. Yeah. So if you're a fan of like 90s Marvel trading cards, make sure you get these. There's going to be one for every team member. So
yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah, pretty good. I'm excited. The X-Men stuff's been really good, but I'm also worried because if Hickman leaves, I'm worried about the direction.
I don't know, though. I had heard Al Ewing was going to take over the X-Men after him. So
I'd be fine with that. I mean, I look at it probably, you know, when he took on Fantastic Four, it was with the task of taking the Fantastic Four away from the Marvel Universe for a while because they were mad at Fox.
Yeah.
What he's doing with X-Men was more bringing them back into the fold. So even when he leaves, I don't expect like any kind of like switch to be flipped where there's no planet that they live on in space, you know, and I mean, I expect all that stuff to stay.
Right.
Now we got movies.
Oh my god.
And yep. You know what else is out with I didn't watch the first episode, but maybe we'll do a review next time we have a show. Titans season 3 started. The first 3 episodes are out.
Oh yeah.
And they got decent reviews. So
cool. I would have to watch it from the beginning. So
yeah,
because I've never watched it. So
because I would recommend
you have basically told me enough about it to where I don't really care.
So. Yeah, I would watch if you're interested. See, I'm going to watch this season because HBO took it over, whereas before it was done on that DC Universe app.
Right.
So bigger budget. I'm expecting good things from it being an HBO production. So right. I'm going to give it a shot, but if you want to watch it, I would just watch a quick recap of season 1 and 2 on YouTube. Do not waste your time watching the first 2 seasons. So,
fair enough.
Yeah.
All right. So do you want to talk about Suicide Squad first, since that came out first?
Okay, so I will say I liked What If a lot. I think there's more to talk about with Suicide Squad because it was longer. Okay, so I say knock out What If real quick.
Okay, we can talk about What If. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was cool. And I think I don't know if they're going to do it in every single one of the movies as a What If version with chronology in that universe. Like, so the next one would have to be what? Captain Marvel, right?
I would think
because that would be the like if they're including that in the, if they're doing all of the movies, if they're just going to focus on like the Cap, Thor, and well, I guess they're not because we've already seen they're going to do Guardians, Black Panther. So,
and I looked on IMDb, and Chadwick Boseman is credited for 4 episodes. So right. My guess is they maybe the first 6 or 7 are directly like this one with movies with a mm-hmm. little change in each one. But then they all come into this universe kind of like the way we saw at the end of this episode. And then something happens. So...
So you think it's going to play out a little more like an Exiles book?
Yeah.
Where it's going to be here are all the random people that the changes happen to, and then it's going to be the team up. I can see that. I think it'd be all right. There were moments in this where I was absolutely super pumped, though. Like when she flips that truck over and is just like, that was awesome. Let's do that again. I was like,
what did she say?
Yes.
She's like, that's brilliant. Let's see if we can give it another go. And then she flips the next truck over. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that was awesome. I really enjoyed the Hydra Thumper. I thought that was cool. I like that they used a lot of the same scenes from Captain America. And
they just did those little twists on them. Yep. They even explained it to you that first one. It was like, right there. That's the moment. That's the moment where, you know, when she doesn't leave the room.
Yep.
I thought that was cool. There was people complaining that it moved too quick. And I'm like, okay, first of all, have you ever read a What If book? they kind of get right to.
Yep.
But second of all, like, you know, I don't want to see a 2-hour version of just that. Because I know it's basically... 80% of it is going to play out the way Captain America, the movie, played out.
Right.
So I just need those little bits that are different.
Yep.
And I thought it was perfect.
Enough to know the gist of what changed. Right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I also think that people are, when they say they think it's too fast, I think the problem is that people don't understand that this stuff's not going to, there's a very small chance you're going to see any of this stuff show up in actual continuity.
They did say there's a possibility for some. I could see with, but you know, like obviously Black Panther, that's never going to happen.
Right.
But for as much as fans love Haley Atwell and wanted like Agent Carter, I could see that being a thing with her. But go ahead. Sorry, you were saying.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was going to say. I think I was like, the only one I can really see being the carryover is Captain Carter. And then a lot of people were complaining about it because they're like, she's got such big shoulders and she didn't have that. And I'm like, dude, neither did even the shrunk Steve down Rogers. Steve Rogers before he got in there. So calm down. And you're complaining about a freaking cartoon, dude. Calm down. Yeah. Dial it down.
I thought the same thing. I'm like, did they not watch the original Captain America movie? Like, he was that big.
Right?
He had that big old head.
No, they're more these are the guys that are complaining because Cap's not Steve, not a dude.
Yeah.
That's their problem.
But he was still, the best part was like, while the first Captain America was definitely like a Steve Rogers story, it was also an Agent Carter story and a Bucky story. It was a group effort in that movie, and they kept that same vibe in this one. Howard was great. I thought he was awesome. I always liked him as Howard Stark, and I wish that he wouldn't have went off to do Preacher, so we could have got more of him as Howard Stark.
Right.
So...
Yeah, I enjoyed him as Howard. Well, I mean, then, you know, he was on the Agent Carter show as well. So, but, you know, but that not enough people gave it credit. And, you know, it's the same people that complained about that are the same guys that are complaining about Masters of the Universe right now.
Yeah. You know,
know, they just can't understand why a woman can be in the front line like that. And I'm like,
yep.
Well, if you actually paid attention to the character from back in the day, you would know that this is actually how it is. So,
yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, it's 2021. Grow the fuck up.
Yeah. Get with it.
Yeah. Welcome to the real world. Right. Right.
But yeah. So overall, I'd say I'd give it like probably like a B minus. I thought it was a really good episode, and I'm really excited for what next week's is going to be. So
I'd probably give it a solid B, like a, yeah, just a regular B. And my things with it were mostly animation problems.
There was because like parts, I just don't know if you noticed.
I'm not. I don't really like. Yeah. That, and like I don't 100% like that cell shading animation. That's not the kind of animation I like. So
that part didn't bother me. Because I thought it looked like a nice advancement on cell shaded. It didn't look as, I mean, it's definitely cel shaded, but it didn't look like very early 2000s video games cel shaded. It was definitely more advanced. But yeah, some of the voice acting was spotty at times. But none of these people have ever done just straight voice acting, so I imagine being a regular actor and then trying to get into just doing the voice can be kind of hard. But overall, I thought everybody did a really good job.
Yep. So. All right, now we can talk about Suicide Squad. I can't believe we're going to get this in an hour. Holy fucking shit.
Yeah.
Look at us being awesome.
We're awesome.
Proficient today.
Yeah.
So I'd probably give Suicide Squad like a... Oh, man. I'd probably put it like... Probably in like... top five DC book movies, definitely not number one. I'm not a big fan of, I wasn't a big fan of the Guardians movies. And this to me felt very much so like Guardians of the DC universe. Cause you can pull up, you can straight up be like King Shark, Groot, Polka Dot Man, pretty much Rocket, you know, yeah. And you can place each one exactly where they are. Was it cool to see dudes like Calendar Man? Hell yeah.
That was awesome. I told my wife, I was like, oh, it's Calendar Man. And never, I don't.
And Kaleidoscope. Like, Calendar Man. Kaleidoscope, yep, was in it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So like those were the things that I really liked about it. Like the Easter eggy type things. But yeah, I thought the story was pretty boring. Like, it was pretty run of the mill. I thought it had some pacing issues.
Did probably I could think have been King about Shark... a half hour shorter, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. I thought King Shark was hilarious, and they did him better justice than Groot, because Groot, yeah, is supposed to be a mercenary like that.
Yeah.
But I thought King Shark was a little too stupid. Just a little, yeah, too stupid. But overall, like I enjoyed myself. I thought it was good. I thought it was a little too bright for the actual tone of the movie.
I think the only part that I found where it was bright was with Starro at the end, but I thought I liked that part of it. Well, okay. I'll backtrack for a second. There was two other parts. One where Harley is going through and killing all those guys in that building, and the flowers are shooting up behind, yeah, her. That was a cool scene. I'm guessing what he was going for was the madness in her head. Mm-hmm. But it was neat because then she goes outside and they're trying to save her. You can see in the building and all those flowers and stuff are still shooting up in the building. And I found out that the thing where she gets the key with her foot and unlocks, yeah, the padlock, she actually did that.
What? In the movie. No.
Yeah, she actually performed that and did that, wow, in the movie. And I thought that's that awesome. Was cool. And then the other part was King
that's
Shark.
That's like a Michelle Pfeiffer whipping the candles thing, you know?
Yeah. And then the other part was King Shark with the fish when they were like making like his. I was looking at this. I'm like, okay, this is too bright. and they look like Pixar. Like, yeah. I'm like, are those real fish? I don't think those are real fish. I need to find out if they're real fish because they look like a Pixar cartoon. So that part was kind of weird. But overall, like Starro, when he came out, I thought he was pretty bright, and it helped it to be more noticeable, like when they went and attached to the face.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Well, this was like a thoroughly antithesis to a Snyder film because it was very bright. Like there was a lot of actual killing on screen. You know, there was humor.
And dark humor.
And really dark humor. Yeah. Which is also, I think, a turnoff for me because, like, while I like it in things like Evil Dead, that's different because it has a horror vibe. Like, this to me, like, it kind of was like he was like, all right, I'm going to take Guardians of the Galaxy and Snatch, and I'm going to try to throw them together. And I'm like, no, don't touch that. Don't touch Snatch. Yeah. That's such a great movie. So it to me just felt like he was pushing it a little too far. Like I said, though, had a lot of fun, thought it was fun. The other thing with the that was totally making fun of Snyder was Starro just completely wrecking everything. And he was just like, whatever, I'm wrecking this whole fucking town. And it was just like, come on.
And then when they're like, you see that? That's your mother. And you look up and it's like his, you know, his mother, and it's giant. My thing with it was, it was a good movie that if they never made another Suicide Squad movie again, it wouldn't bother me. Mm. Can you take a winning formula of a decent movie with, great character moments, and can you apply that to other DC franchises without doing the Dark Knight Nolan thing where they just make everything super dark? Can you make everybody have those individual flavors that make them the characters everybody loves? So that'll be the thing. I don't trust DC as far as movies goes. I have a feeling every film after this will feel like they're just doing the Suicide Squad thing, you know? So that's my concern, but it was a good movie. I don't have any attachment to those characters. So
yeah, I did feel that this was probably the best portrayal of Harley we've seen yet though.
Absolutely. She was redeemed completely after the Birds of Prey, which was awful. And then the first Suicide Squad, as well. I know they took off some of the tattoos that she didn't like. She had the one on her jaw, and then there was one on her back that originally was like property of Joker or something, and they changed that up. It was like property of no one, or you know, something along those lines. But yeah, they did a very good job. Probably the best DC movie since Batman Begins.
I still think Shazam and Aquaman were better.
I hated both of those.
I think Shazam's the best DC movie out of the new stuff.
I thought it was like them trying to do Marvel, and a lot of DC fans are like, oh, Marvel's so campy. And then that movie was like way more campy than like a Marvel movie.
I thought it was the first one that actually hit the tone of the character right. Like legitimately right.
I will agree with that. I guess I'm not like Shazam. I could take it or leave it. I hated the suit. I could clearly tell it was a muscle suit, and I wish that the lightning bolt wasn't like a nightlight, that they CG'd like some Kirby Crackle inside of it. Would have looked way cooler if they would have done something like that. So I thought way too soon to bring in like the Shazam family, like Mary Marvel and stuff. Like I was
expecting Mary and Freddy. I was not expecting the rest of the kids.
So. Yeah.
I just thought that movie for DC to try to hit the tone of the character the most correct, that was the movie that they hit. The reason I put Aquaman second is, like, that is the first movie they did that followed pretty much an entire comic storyline and did it well. It was pretty much the entire New 52 line.
It was pretty much the entire New 52 line in one movie. They were like, we're going to this location, and 5 minutes later, we're going to this location, and this one, and this one. I was like, I was waiting for a map to come up with, like, the little dashes showing with all the place. They just, I think Aquaman could have been better had they just showed some restraint and not done so many places.
I thought it was good because they did that whole story. Like, they actually finished a good storyline
and
made it work. Like, they didn't just do it and then cut out chunks. Like, you know, like, they weren't just going to be like, oh, we're going to try to do the whole New 52 storyline, but we're going to do the first part and the last part and fuck the rest. Like, I thought they did a good job of getting the whole thing in there and doing it where it kept the pace moving. It kept the movie perpetually moving forward. I thought it was cool to see the trench.
The trench part was awesome. Was awesome. Yeah. There were little things that irritated me. Like, you know, when they were in that village and Black Manta is, you know, they had that chase scene.
Yeah.
And he's hanging on a gutter and he's like 5 feet off the ground. He's like, no, what am I going to do? I'm going to fall. But then, like, later when they're on that that outlook and there's those stone statues or whatever they're looking through, he gets, like, blown off it and he's fine. It's like, you were just afraid to fall, like, 5 feet off that roof, dude. Like
he caught him off guard, man. Caught him off guard.
I guess.
All.
But,
just got caught off guard. That's all. That's all it was.
I had somebody say to me, well, Dark Knight's the best of the Batman. And I'm like, it's not. It's Batman Begins. I thought he played – Batman was at his best in that movie. Dark Knight is great. This is what I do when I want to watch Dark Knight. I fast forward to every Joker scene, and then that's how I watch Dark Knight, because there's too much Batman talking and it ruins the movie. It takes away from, like, the fear aspect of it that you got in the first one, you know, when he's, like, hiding in the shadows and he drops down on, like, Falcone's car and, you know, things like that. So I think Batman Begins is the best of those three. The third one, obviously, is absolute garbage.
All right. a total bonus thing, but did you watch the Val Kilmer documentary on Amazon yet?
Not yet. I saw that it was on there. I feel bad for that guy. So it's like, can I do that? I don't know.
I was not aware of some of the shit that he went through, but it was very, very good, in my opinion. Like, it was very informative. I did not know that his ex-wife was the girl from Willow. They met on set, and they have two kids, and his son narrates most of it for him, because he kind of sounds like him anyway. But they're, like, he talks about the whole Batman thing and how, like, he couldn't sit down. Like, you either are on the floor or you're standing up, and you can't get, you yourself cannot make yourself stand up or sit down in the bat suit. He's like, and you can't hear anything. He's like, so he kind of felt like he got the shaft because it was more about Tommy Lee Jones and Jim Carrey's characters.
Yeah.
Which I don't disagree 100%. But I also thought, but I thought that he did the best at being just Batman, not Bruce Wayne. His Bruce Wayne scene sucked, but I thought he did great as just Batman. So
yeah, he was pretty crappy as Bruce Wayne. I didn't like him as Bruce Wayne.
I thought Michael Keaton played the best just Bruce Wayne. I thought Val Kilmer played the best just Batman, and I thought Christian Bale played the best of both. So
yeah, he did until until he didn't. The third one just got way away from them in the third one.
Fair.
It's just
fair.
Yeah. I think a lot of people around still better here than like Bad it Flag, because so. Yeah, I don't know. I like him as I like his Batman.
I like his Batman. I like his Bruce Wayne. I don't like his Batman.
Yeah, I don't like his Bruce Wayne. I don't like that he looks like he's like 5 years older than or 5 years younger than Alfred. I think that's very weird. Like,
that's fair.
I get that they were going for an older one, but then like you need like a really old Alfred, you know?
Yeah.
Everybody wants to make Alfred. I know Alfred has like a background that's exciting, but they're like, you know, there's the Pennyworth show they did.
Oh, that show's awesome. Have you not watched it?
No, because I don't care. Because the guy that's like helping Batman out should never be cooler than Batman. So I don't want to know any of it.
It's kind of like the Earth One version of Alfred, because he's the one that learned to do all that stuff and showed Bruce how to do that and become that guy. Yeah.
Yeah. So. But I think that's what the vibe of the new Pennyworth comic is too, right? It's essentially like it's the TV show.
Yeah. From what I understand. I really thought that show was awesome though. I really dug it because I really dug Earth One Alfred, where he was like this shotgun toting MI5 dude. Like,
yeah.
So, oh, I can't believe Ron was apparently on Saturday Night Live with Val Kilmer and you two.
Oh my God.
That's awesome because my phone consistently tries to play U2 in the car because I have that damn thing on Apple Music. And I'm like, please stop doing that, Apple Music.
Ron's out here like just telling us how successful he is. I was on this guy.
This is how he has all the money to keep you employed, I'm telling you.
That's true.
No, he said it was his wife's money, actually. So, which was funny.
I can't believe we made it through this without having issues with the storm, because I can hear it behind you. I'm sure you can hear it here.
Yeah, it's nuts. Yeah. It's loud, man. Like, I thought I was going to lose power or something, but...
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, thanks, guys, for watching. We'll see everybody in 2 weeks. Don't forget to come out to the Raw and Friends signing. Also, don't forget the 25th of August cosplay karaoke down at the Hard Rock. It is a Heroes Initiative charity event. It's $5 to go at all. You can buy your tickets online. And it's a little bit more than that to sing. We already have 3 people signed up to sing. It's going to be awesome sauce. I love it.
Nice.
So, and the theme is time.
Do they pick their song?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So what we kind of went originally, it was you chose your cosplay, and then we sent you 3 songs that we thought would be ironic for that character to sing. So like Daredevil would be like, I Can See for Miles, or Blinded by the Light, or something like that. Right. But then it kind of morphed into, we give you a theme for the show. Like, we one time had duets, so you had to come as a team. So like we had like a Mr. Rogers and Trolley as a duet, and we Batgirl and Nightwing, and we had Harley and Ivy, and we had Doctor Who, and I think at that point it was a Doctor and Clara. And this one's going to, it's called Back in Time. Because obviously we're finally back. So
then I can do my song. I have 2 songs I would do.
Sure. Wait. First, what's the cosplay?
I have no clue.
Okay.
I just know that I would sing Toni Braxton, Unbreak My Heart.
Okay.
That's what I would sing. The other song you may not know is How's That by Sherbet.
I don't.
Yeah. Make sure you listen to it. How's that? It's exactly what you think it would be. It's amazing.
Oh, man. I haven't chosen which one I'm going to do yet, but I will probably... I might do something. I might do a group number with the other MC. Sometimes... It also depends on if I can get a costume, although I do have a lot of Star Trek gear, and if I wear like a Calvin Timeline red shirt, I can
how's just, your harmony game? How's your harmony doing?
It's not terrible, but it's not great.
So. We might be able to do something.
Who did that song? Remember the Time.
Yeah. Michael Jackson.
Yeah, we can do that. That'd be awesome.
I can do the one part where he's like, brap, dap, dap. You know, that part that's at the end. Eddie Murphy was in that video. And Iman.
He was. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Eddie Murphy played like the Pharaoh or something, right?
Yep. Yeah.
Oh, man.
We should do it. We should do a duet or something together. Hey, it's the guys from the podcast. And here's their song.
Oh, you know what would be even better is if we did as Jay and Silent Bob, Jungle Love, because it's Doris Day and the Time.
Okay. I mean, like, I was already getting excited to dress up like a pharaoh.
Oh, yeah, that would be awesome too, though. I'm not saying that.
Ron wants to know what he should sing if he gets a Green Arrow costume.
Oh, man. this is going to sound terrible, but Tim's going to love it. Hit or miss. Some new found glory, buddy. Hit or miss.
Yep. Hit or miss would be good.
Or you give love a bad name.
Shot through the heart. I was thinking the same thing. And you're to blame.
Right. Also, I just found out a friend of mine just texted me that Meatloaf is going to be at Steel City Con this weekend.
Oh,
and I was like,
a replacement for John Bernthal.
I guess. I went like so. I might be going out there to help the 501st on Sunday tear down. And I thought was, man, if I run into him, I'm totally gonna be like, yo, dude, can I take a selfie with you and send it to your son-in-law? And he'll be like, you know, Scott. So that'd be awesome. Maybe I'll wear my Anthrax shirt just to be like, yo.
Would it be, well, what do you usually make the next day with Meatloaf? Like a Meatloaf sandwich?
I don't like Meatloaf to eat it at all.
That's why we're friends. I hate Meatloaf. That's my one of my favorite scenes in Christmas Story. Meatloaf, double beet loaf. I hate Meatloaf. That's how I feel.
That's awesome. Ron, I will actually get back to you on some more options for the Green Arrow. That would be really funny, though.
If Ron goes, then I'll probably have to go too.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. You can get all the information at the Three Rivers events page on the Facebooks. And actually, I think most of the information is also on ThreeRiversComicCon.com. You just have to search. I think you hit, like, schedule, or it's one of the tabs, and it drops down. You'll see cosplay karaoke in there. It is a lot of fun. But we are taking pre-registration this time. And remember that it goes to charity, so it's good time. No, Ron, Meatloaf is not tasty. Like, no.
The worst.
No. But I'll be glowing like the blade at the end of a knife. So, yeah. But all right, bad meatloafs are done. Anyway,
all right.
Oh, so all right. Thanks everybody for watching and hanging out.
Thanks, guys.
We'll catch you in 2 weeks. Enjoy your off week and make sure you come down and see Ron Friends at the Waterfront or the Mills.
Pick up your Heroes Union books.
Do it. You can make sure you pre-order it and we'll pull it for you next week and have it right there. So bring your other stuff too. Like if you have something else that he has, that's cool too. But remember, try not to overdo it and at least buy his new book if you're going to do that.
Yeah.
So
we've got good customers. They'll be respectful.
I wasn't worried about any of our regulars. I was worrying about everybody.
Oh, yeah, the unregulars.
Yeah, the
irregulars.
The irregulars that leave giant stacks of comics on the dollar books all the time and shit like that.
One more thing, too. I forgot. We were supposed to – these guys need a name, a nickname.
Oh, crap. That is true. Oh, wait, did Mike get his box? Did he get his box of stuff yet, do you know?
He's on vacation.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's on vacation this week. So You guys need a nickname. We want you to have a nickname. So we'll do some kind of a prize or something. I don't know what it'll be yet, but like, let's have a contest. You guys need to come up with a name for yourself.
All right. So in 2 weeks, when we do the show,
yep.
During the show, while we're interviewing our guest, yep. You guys can load the comments with the nickname you want to do. We're going to have our yep. guest choose it.
Okay. And I then, like that idea.
And then whoever wins is going to get a signed Lost Angels book because they ship today.
Oh, nice. Ron was just asking me about this. So, yeah, I like that idea. So you guys think of your name. We'll mention it again. I'll put a post up just to remind everybody. And then in 2 weeks, we'll let Jordan Blum, the guy.
Actually, should be. How about this? Whoever wins during that episode, I will buy them one of the MODOK figures, the MODOK Legends, because they're freaking awesome.
Okay.
So, boom. There you go. Somebody's winning a MODOK because that'll be perfect for that. So,
Ron, we will talk about. I use Cover Price in CLZ, but I like Cover Price. We will do a show where we talk about the different things everybody uses and the benefits of each one. So,
yeah, we may actually try to find a couple of different people to talk about that. So that'll be fun.
Yeah,
what they use. So. All right, cool. Thanks, everybody. Cool. And catch you laters.
Bye, guys.